Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, up and at 'em, ready to go. Cameron, you look very awake. How much coffee have you consumed so far this morning?
I'm on my second cup, man.
You look ready. Ready to record an amazing podcast. Mm-hmm. Dude, how you doing?
Good. Just got done making biscuits. That was like my thing. I'm perfecting my biscuit recipe, and they're pretty delightful, man. I'm not going to lie. Like, they're amazing. Flaky, buttery, they're awesome.
So, are we talking buttermilk biscuits? What are we talking about?
Buttermilk biscuits. No substitution for that.
Okay. So, Cameron, here's a little key. Like, you don't have to pop the can all the way open. You can just peel the side of the can and just hit it on the side of the counter. And then the can will pop open and you just put the biscuits on the thing.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a plebeian, you can do that. Sure.
So, we're gonna go into biscuits, okay? Right now, the question is: do you drop biscuits where it's just like rolled up on a spoon and thrown on the thing, or do you actually cut them with a biscuit cutter?
Oh yeah, no. We roll those out 3 times to make them layered, and then I have my biscuit cutter. Put them on the oven 425, 15 minutes. You got yourself a nice flaky biscuit.
Are you pro baking stone or anti baking stone?
I'm pro baking stone. I mean, I don't use it often, but I'm pro. Yeah.
Okay. I'm a big drop biscuit guy because I do biscuits and gravy.
Yeah, those are great. Yeah.
So like I mean they're these big chunky biscuits. Like chunky. You know what I'm saying? Because it just matches the mouthfeel, if you will, of the sausage gravy. And I'll tell you this, Cameron, I won't turn down a bacon gravy either. I think bacon gravy is super underrated.
I agree. So, why do we have a magic podcast? We should just only be talking about food.
There's a certain percentage of our listeners that listen overseas, and they're like, what is happening? These Americans. Look, guys, we like our dairy fat mixed with our meat fat, and then we add some flour, okay?
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, anyway, we'll have heart disease when we're 45, but that's okay. That's like 9 years away. We're good. Cameron. Kind of just rolling along this week. We're kind of continuing some stories. We do have a few spoilers that have popped up for Guilds of Ravnica Allegiance, I think or Ravnica Allegiance, or however that's all broken down. Mm-hmm. But I want to hear from you, Cameron, because there's been a big shift. You went from Arena Doubter to you just got a quick taste. You saw what it tastes like, and now you're a full-blown addict, correct?
It's true, yeah. I wouldn't say I was ever a doubter. Like, I mean, I've always been pro Arena. I just have been, I think, lazy is the word as far as like just downloading a new thing on my computer, right?
Here's what I hate about you being the producer is I can't say cut to the tape and then we go back because you're never going to cut to the tape.
Oh, yeah. No way. You know? No. Yeah. No, but full on Arena addict, right? I've been hitting Arena hard and it's great. To the point where like I have the option of going to Friday Night Magic to go play Paper Modern or stay home, play some jazz music and have Arena, you know, on and just play that, right? So that's kind of like this weird thing that I'm kind of running up against right now. Legacy will still always be Legacy just because that community that I have at my shop is super awesome. But Arena, dude. Blue-Black Control, been hitting that some more, just getting my reps in. Really, really dig the deck. There's nothing really new to talk about with that. I did run through the Dominaria draft as well, and man, I miss me, Dominaria. It's still, like, I think somehow it has, like, that magic sauce of an approachable, I feel like anybody who is new to Magic can play this and kind of understand what's going on. And then it's just also got like all those different layers and mechanics that just make it super fun. So, I don't know. I'm already missing that. Like that sometimes I just wish I could only ever play draft Dominaria. If I had my options of anything to draft, super fun. And then lastly, I've been hitting the Kibler's Giant Monsters, which is just like a special constructed draft thing or constructed thing that's going on MTG Arena right now. How it works is anytime you cast a creature of 4 mana or more, you can draw a card. So it's essentially, it just creates an emblem at the very beginning of the game. That's how you can draw cards. It's weird, first and foremost, and I kind of like this, that because of how fluid and quick Arena is, you can kind of create like these new mechanics on Magic that you can't very easily do, it seems like. Maybe, I mean, you can do this like on a kitchen table sort of thing, where if, like, you and I were playing, we could totally do this if we wanted to, and it would work. But I kind of like how Arena can just tweak the rules to its thing to kind of keep it fresh. It's really weird and kind of, it's delightful. I like that a lot. So Kibler's Monsters, I've played it 3 times. I tried a red-green, just, you know, as many big giant creatures as I could, and I did very, very poorly. And then I played Merfolk, which has like no giant creatures, mm-hmm. and still won because, like, you know, I cast Sleep, tap whatever giant stupid Carnage Titan they have, and then just swing away with 15 Merfolk, and it's amazing. It's super fun. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I really like what's going on with Arena right now, as far as, like, just here's, like, a weekend event, something fun, hit it, you know, and then go back to Standard the next day.
Right, and they should be commended, because the limitations of only having this card pool, right, mm-hmm. have bred a lot of creativity in them doing these things that they would have never done on Magic Online to freshen stuff up. Also, this, we'll call them stipulation games, right? But, like, anything with these, like, special mechanics, or, hey, it's guest starring, you know, this person, and they want, A, it's promotional because it gets that person's Twitch viewers in, so it's smart on a marketing level, but it also gets people like you and I, that I would say, like, are a little bit more spiky, once you apply rewards to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's like, when I sit down to play Arena, and it's like, oh, this has really good EV for me to grind, I have a deck ready to go, let's do this. And, you know, I felt that way about the Guilds of Ravnica block stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to get more and more rich as they keep adding card pools to it, right?
Yeah. Can I just add, like, you know, like, one of the best things about MTGO that I always loved but hated for the value was, like, the flashback stuff. Flashback Legacy League or whatever. And it was just so much money invested for such a fun product, and there's never really any financial, it just didn't really work out financially, right? So I can't imagine in 2 years' time, once that card pool is doubled, what we'll be up against. It'll be super fun, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, who knows what this looks like on their back end, you know, but I can't imagine a scenario where they come out and say, guys, we're going to let you flashback draft Innistrad on Arena. I think people would lose their minds. I can't imagine a scenario where they would not make a ton of money back. Now, granted, they have to kind of lay the tracks for Standard, and I'm sure that's what they're working away at, and also getting the feature set, getting, you know, the fifth card problem, all those little things sorted out. I do want to talk about Arena's kind of issues that came up this week, because those aren't news items for us. But they did a major update. There were some really nice changes to the UI. I don't know if you noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole idea that, you know, the competitive mode would be best of one, not best of three, I actually find myself agreeing with most of the, we'll call them, arena grouches, the people that are, I mean, every time Arena pops up, there's a certain category of people that are just completely negative about it online and on Twitter. And, they're right in that the best of three is the way that you should play high-level competitive Magic. To me, that is not a thing that should be changed. If you're putting people into the World Championships and these kinds of things, it needs to be a best of three with a sideboard. I think that is a thing that differentiates Magic. It's not that complicated. It's one of those things that's very easy to briefly understand, but takes, I would argue that I still don't sideboard correctly all the time. It's something that you're in your life as a Magic player is really important and differentiates it from other CCGs. It also, if you don't have sideboards, I think we're on the highway to mega aggressive decks, and then, you know, four settle the wreckage main deck kind of decks, and then the metagame, I think, kind of becomes more swingy. And WotC might look at that internally and think that's a good thing. I very much don't. So yeah, there's that. Cameron, I'm just going to briefly touch upon Arena that I played this week because I had an issue where my Arena wouldn't start up, and I had to do all the nightmare PC gaming stuff of updating my graphics card, updating my drivers, trying to figure out what was wrong. And then come to find out, I had to alter the registration because the screen resolution wasn't displaying correctly. So I had to go in, uninstall the registry. Some PC people out there know what I'm talking about. For screen resolution, uninstall Arena, reinstall Arena, and that ate like, you know, 30 some odd minutes of my play time. But I did jump into Arena, and it did occur to me, while I think the standard is fantastic, I am ready for some new cards to be injected into the format. I played against Blue-Black Disinformation Campaign 3 straight times. And, I mean, it was just, maybe it's just the variance, or maybe it's just that affordable and easy to grind to. But I played the mirror twice, and basically they cast Eldest Reborn before I did. And, so that was that. And then I switched to Jeskai and won easily. So, hey, you know, whatever, but these were all three different users. And, you know, I'm also kind of in this weird situation talking about selling out or changing or whatever. I have my legacy deck. I have my two modern decks. I have my standard deck. And, you know, this is dad family stuff, but my daughter just signed up for a new volleyball league, and all her games are Friday nights for the next 8 weeks. And so it's like, okay, do I sell my standard deck? Do I hold on to it? And then, you know, so I'm really struggling what to do. Obviously, I'm still going to be playing standard on Arena, so that's fine. But then it's also just staring straight down the barrel of 8 weeks of modern. Ooh, oh boy. You know, it's a lot of linear play. It's a lot of linear play. So, Cameron, we're going to get out of this segment. We're going to talk a little bit about the details for this Pro League. They debuted some info on ESPN, Cameron. That's a sports news network.
Interesting.
Yeah. They
have popular?
Yeah. Depends on who you ask. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So anyway, we'll be right back after this. Hey, Cameron.
What's up, dude?
Hey, so Magic. It's becoming more professional. I don't even know how to describe this massive sea change. So we talked about it a little bit last week. Now we have details on who the top 32 players are, what their salary will be, how that will all look. We've got some major coverage. And we also have these promoted Twitch streams. So I just knee-jerk reaction. What do you think, man?
Where did all this money come from Wizards? Like, have they been, like, just hoarding it for so long that they can just, like, now, hey, we're going to just have a $10,000 tournament. Have fun with that, right? So knee-jerk is like, wow, this is exciting. I think it's going to pay off. I think so. I mean, as far as just, like, I guess how I hope this pays off is, like, this is the groundwork for which maybe the tournaments are handled from here on out, which is super exciting.
Yeah, I think it provides some really strong exposure. Like, it's really hard to put a dollar amount on getting an article posted on ESPN. You know what I mean? Like, it's really difficult to... but they're positioning this in such a way. So, first of all, my guess would be that a decent chunk of this money is coming from these events that got canned. Not all of it. But how much did the World Magic Cup really cost? You know what I mean? Like, all these other events that were removed must have been incredibly expensive. I don't think they just footed the bill for this as a whole, right? Mm-hmm. But the strategy now is becoming much more clear about how this will work and how it interacts with Arena and all this stuff. But, you know, Channel Fireball had a great article on it about how this compares to other esports. And by the way, it does pretty efficiently. This is by Josh Silvestri. Go read on Channel Fireball because it's a really, really thoughtful article. It gets into like how Overwatch players get paid and stuff like that. And look, we're not going to be top of the ladder. We're not going to be, you know, Dota 2 pros and that kind of thing. But again, and I said this last week, it's a very understandable thing. And now that we have these 32 players, it's much more likely that I'll sit and watch. Like, it's so much easier to go, hey, Cameron, tonight, 1v3 in best of 5 standard. And you might go, sweet, I'd watch that. You know what I mean? Like,
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just so much easier to process. Now, this did come up in the community, and I do want to mention it. If you look at the top 32 players, there are no women. It is, as you might expect, a not very diverse crew. And I think that's a pretty solid reflection of what we're seeing in Magic at the professional mm-hmm. level. And that's unfortunate. I do think this last, especially 5 years, you hate to pinpoint it, but I think it's been this steady crescendo of female voices in the community that's been great and what we need and just need to continue. But in terms of the solution, I don't know that it's very appropriate for me to be like, this is what we need to do, because
yeah.
I'm kind of on the outside looking in, but it does, it is noticeable. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So Cameron, the other thing I wanted to mention is, on the promotional end is Mr. Sanderson. So, Brandon Sanderson has been hired to, I should say hired, been, has written a novella, right? Brandon Sanderson is an actual fantasy author, not a lore writer for Wizards of the Coast or something, but like an actual fantasy writer who's a fan of the game. I think many episodes ago, I talked about how I went to one of his signings and then I signed up to play draft in
something, right? Yeah, yeah.
I want to say it was Cons Block, something.
Yeah.
And so I got to draft with Brandon Sanderson, and that was super cool. I think he does that at a lot of his bigger events. But I'm actually going to consume this lore. And I hate to make this a parade of positivity, Cameron, but what are the chances you would actually read this novella?
If it were George R. R. Martin approved and it was the last book of Game of Thrones, finished by Brandon Sanderson. yeah, I mean, okay, cool. Like, I mean, he's a obviously a great writer. I very much have enjoyed things that I've read from him.
But this isn't your jam.
It's going to have to be pretty good, or like, you know, be shadow authored by some Star Trek scriptwriter. Maybe then I'll do it. So, yeah.
It's cool. Yeah. It is cool. This is our dynamic, by the way. Cameron is much more of a sci-fi reader, and I am much more of a fantasy slash comic book reader, though we do, you know, dabble in the other
categories. We dip our toes in the other one. Yeah.
But it's not... It's not like you're like, doorstopper fantasy, sign me up. That is not that is not your thing. All right, Cameron, you kind of wanted to talk about these Ravnica Allegiance spoilers. Is there any card? So we've got some promo pictures that aren't verified. Which one was sticking out to you that you wanted to talk about?
Well, just as far as like something that I think that's interesting, and I'm thinking of this more just in like Legacy, is Growth Spiral. It's an instant that costs a green and a blue. You draw a card, and then you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. So, like, that is just so much value in something like a Shardless deck or something like that. I really like this idea of just being able to ramp very, very quickly within a green, blue, black sort of format. So overall, that's the one I that jumped out to me. Another possibility is just in like 12 post, playing like a blue, green 12 post again, and just being able to lay out just another land card and then, you know, net some value seems pretty solid. So that's the one that like really is jumping out to me, is like, I'm intrigued. I don't know if this card, I don't think, has existed before. It seems new. So that's one I like.
I think you're almost thinking too fair with it, Cameron. So the two things that kind of sparked my interest with this card, because I do think there is possibility for something with this, but I don't know if it would be an Amulet Titan. But that's the kind of effect that they're looking for, and their mana base is largely blue-green. And then lands, because you're dredging loam, when you draw the card, essentially it allows you to rescue loam at instant speed if they try to extract it. And then you might also be able to instant speed Thespian Stage.
Oh, man.
Which is pretty nuts. But typically, Legacy lands isn't like heavy blue, if at all. So that would be unusual. Two mana in Legacy lands isn't the end of the world, but it's still... You know, you're playing a lot of two drops, plus you're playing Wasteland, plus you're, you know, So there's a lot going on with that mana base, and granted, you're playing like 40 lands, and I understand that. It's tougher than you might think. So this Light the Stage card, we know next to nothing about it because it's got a mechanic we don't know called Spectacle. It's 2 in a red, and it says, and it's a sorcery. Exile the top 2 cards of your library until end of your next turn. You may play those cards end of your next turn, which is weird. But then it says Spectacle Red. So to me, that reads like a permanent needs to leave the battlefield, or you need to sacrifice a creature or discard a card or something to make this happen. What do you think?
Hopefully it's like Miracle. Spectacle Miracle, and it's we'll just get like another 1 mana Wrath for Miracles, and it'll be amazing. So yeah, overall, like it's a cool card. Like I'm very intrigued now. I want more context as far as like what Spectacle means, and then also just like how it will relate then to everything else that's in Ravnica right now, because normally those will play together semi nicely. So like I'm interested.
Yeah, I'm also like I'm a little out on this whole red drawing cards thing. So. For the longest time, blue drew cards, and everybody was like, ah, blues, you're drawing cards, it's too busted. And then we go through these spurts. We give it to black, it gets busted. And we're like, mm. Then we give it to green, and there's all these, like, I mean, if Tireless Tracker was a blue card, people would be completely irritated, right? That card was actually just dumb good, right? It still is. And now we have all these red, hey, you know, it's a little random, Exile. Though. Yeah, and it's like, still not doing it for me. Just give me Brainstorm back, please. Is that too much to ask, Cameron? I just want to draw 3 cards for 1 mana, for crying out loud.
How hard is that? Yeah.
How hard is that? Print that card. Anyway, so, Cameron, we are going to get out of this segment, come back. Talk a little bit about what we've been playing and what we've been watching. We'll be right back. All right, Cameron. So what you been up to this week?
Sadly, I have not seen the movie that I'm like most excited for, which is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Super stoked for that. Hopefully I'll be going to it this afternoon and I can give a review of it. Then next week. So, but last night my wife and I rented a movie that was on iTunes. And it's one that's been getting a lot of buzz, like a ton of buzz. And it's called Eighth Grade. It's directed by the guy that's like part of the Mr. Robot team. So the stuff that's on, USA, that it's a pretty good series, but, Eighth Grade is about a girl who I think is just kind of like your average girl who like struggles with popularity, struggles with being quiet, wants to be like a YouTuber, wants to be an Instagrammer, and is really struggling with technology and kind of just being an eighth grade girl in this era of social media. And I'm going to say something, Curtis. This is, I think, the best movie I've seen this year.
Oh, wow.
It is incredibly good. It's thought-provoking. It's like heart-moving. It's it just like I got a swell of the feels of emotional, like just like just being put into that place. Obviously, I wasn't an eighth grade girl in 2018 or 2017 having to deal with all the social media stuff, but just being put back into the just looking at the world through the lens of a middle schooler and just remembering like how weird and awkward and awful we all were in seventh and eighth grade. This movie does such a good job of just kind of just laying it out there. And like my wife and I just like sat and just talked about our time in eighth grade and seventh grade and whatnot. I don't know. It just generated a really good conversation. The story is fantastic. It's just well shot. It does some interesting things as far as of how things are kind of presented. And it just really shows like what the relationship with our phones really is, I think. And like the impact that might have on future generations and whatnot. So I cannot recommend this movie enough. It is seriously, I'm rewatching it today because I just loved it so much, but it is definitely, I think, one of the best movies of the year.
Oh, cool. I don't know that I'll watch it.
yeah, understandable.
Professional hazard, I suppose. But the problem I always have with watching anything featuring teenagers is I find myself hypercritical of how it's presented and what my experience is as a... So I've been teaching 8th grade for 12, 11 years now.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I have a very strong vision in my head. You know, it's like if you watch a show about TV production and you're like, no, I sit in a recliner all day, not an office chair. You know, those little details that just really make it wrong. No, and I've heard really good things about this movie. When I watch, what was the good example? Juno. Oh, man, hate that movie.
Yeah.
Because I felt like that was an adult writing what a teenager would say, not how teenagers actually sound.
Sure.
You know? Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're saying this is not victim to this, that this feels very...
It feels organic, authentic. I would say. Yeah, authentic, yeah.
And that's an awesome thing to pull off. So I just want to talk about a couple things. Number one, Cameron, Noclip, which is a documentary series on YouTube, they posted their series of Half-Life. And it's not their best documentary because anybody that works at Valve refuses to be in the documentary. So it's more of them talking to people from other things or like extraneous or people like, I don't know how many people listening to this were even around back then, but like Gearbox worked on a ton of the stuff for Half-Life and, you know, then they went on to make Borderlands and all this stuff. And so those people talked and kind of described their experience with it. But whenever you're missing Valve, it just kind of feels like you walk away from the documentary with a lot more questions than you had to start with, right?
Sure.
I also just want to talk about this game called Below, okay?
Okay.
Cappy Games has made some of my favorite downloadable titles. They did a Heroes of Might and Magic kind of puzzle tactics game. They did, I think it was called Critter Crunch. It was like a puzzle game where you're this little animated guy and you... it's like a Tetris kind of thing. This is all like PS3, Xbox 360. They're probably best known for the Sword and Sorcery EP that was on iPad and all that. And they announced this game at the launch of the Xbox One. So they've been working on it for like five or 6 years.
Yeah.
And it's weird because it's a roguelike dungeon crawler thing that you could really only play not portably because your character is so small. And the levels are so big. I mean, we're talking like Eco Shadow of the Colossus kind of expression. And the world is so evocative and interesting. And you can tell they spend so much time just polishing the experience. I beg you, if you're out there, do not look up anything about this game. Don't even watch a section of it. Because it ends up being a roguelite that's way more about exploration than it is about combat. And because you're going deep into dungeons, you can't see hardly anything, so you really have to scour these levels, and it feels like an NES game. Like, they don't explain to you how the save system works. They don't explain to you how the combat system works. They don't explain to you how the crafting system works. It's really simple, but it's up to you to sort it out. Now, the thing that I would tell you is the roguelike nature of it, I didn't know until I died. So I just was playing and I was like, this is kind of like this amazing Shadow of the Colossus meets Zelda kind of thing. And then I suddenly died and I was like, wait, what? I guess I got to start over. So that thing didn't, and they did the whole corpse run thing, which is again, a kind of a played out mechanic. Mm-hmm. But everything else about this game is just a tour de force, like playing it in surround. And dude, you're aware of the first like 10 minutes. Just like you are with Celeste. And like the first 10 minutes occurs to you, this is a unbelievably polished, thoughtful experience.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really care about the way I want to play the game. It cares about how it wants to express itself, which is incredible in some ways and frustrating in others. But it's free on Game Pass. Like, I just opened it and downloaded it. So you, if you have Game Pass on PC or Xbox, you just have it.
Yeah. And it kind of it's only available on Xbox, though, or at PC.
PC and Xbox, yeah. Bummer. It's an exclusive with them. But, I mean, I'm sure it'll be on Mac, Cameron, and it can your stuff can run it. Mm-hmm. And your Mac has a bigger screen than your TV anyway, so I don't know why
it's
you're...
True. Yeah.
But, dude, big marks, and it stands in stark contrast to this other game that came out on Game Pass. It was kind of a simultaneous release, Game Pass and wide release, called Ashen.
I heard about that, yeah.
And Ashen is just... It's a really cool art style, but it's just Dark Souls or Bloodborne or any of those. Mm-hmm. And again, the problem is, I get what that mechanic loop is, but I've done it enough now that I'm kind of tired of, oh, you died. Start back at the save point, run, find your corpse, get your stuff. I feel like Neo did that so much better than any other game that's done that. That I don't really care to, because when you play it with, because Ashen plays like the Souls games, like in terms of, or I should say plays like Bloodborne.
Sure.
The kind of parry, heavy parry, all that stuff. And when you play Neo and everything was incredibly diverse and thoughtful and your weapon set mattered, and it's like, now I'm blocking and swinging heavy because they have a, it just feels like you're playing in a game filled with molasses.
Yeah.
So... But if,
you know, it's so funny with like all those games, they all have like the same sort of aesthetic feel to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the thing that turns me off the most. Even like with Neo, I think like Neo is a beautiful game and whatnot, but the aesthetic still has kind of like a Souls feel to it to me. Mm-hmm. I really wish like that mechanic loop existed in like a really bright, colorful, fun world that I want to be in rather than Bloodborne.
Well, Ashen is not fun, but it's definitely a brighter, more cartoony look. And you can play co-op in it, which is kind of their big thing, that you can play Souls co-op.
Yeah.
But because Neo did actual discrete levels, it felt much more digestible to me. And I mean, the combat was just better, you know, like, it was just better combat. Anyway, but below, I think everybody should experience the first 15 minutes of that. I don't know that it's something that everybody wants to, everything wants to stick with, because they do the survival mechanics, and, you know, you can starve in, like, 15 minutes. Like, who are these people that they eat, like, one thing, and they're like, oh, in 15 minutes, I'm going to start losing health. Like, what? Survival mechanics, man, they just need to go away.
Yeah.
all right, dude. So, short episode for us. If someone would like to get in touch with you and talk to you about how to better play Kibler's Dragon Challenge, where could they find you, Cameron?
Yeah, please. That's on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
And I am @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.